Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host for the week, Anthony Wood, and with me today is Landry Locker himself. Landry, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing?
Very good, man. Thanks for having me on. We're close to the season. We're less than 3 weeks away, so it's a good time around here.
Absolutely. It's great just to finally have some football under our belts again. So with that in our minds, obviously we've got the Cowboys game coming up this weekend. How much do you think we can expect to see from the Texans starters?
I don't think a lot. And Bill O'Brien said as much yesterday. A lot of times teams take the opportunity here. They call it the dress rehearsal, and you see them for a couple quarters. But Bill O'Brien said, and you take him at his word for this, but or take it with a grain of salt, however you feel. But he said he's going to treat it a lot like the Detroit game. And in the Detroit game, we really, saw the starters, especially on offense, for one series. So I don't think BLB is going to have the starters out there too much. He might extend them a little bit, but I think he's conservative. I think he's ready to just get healthy and head into the season.
And do you think the same could be said for the Cowboys, or perhaps you think we'll see a bit more of their starters?
I think it'll probably be the same for the Cowboys. I think the guys on defense will probably play a little bit more than usual, but I mean, they don't have Zeke Elliott, so obviously Zeke's not going to be out there. And I think we'll probably see, at least, a couple series from Dak Prescott and them. But, in the past, they've been pretty cautious with their starters as well. So I think we'll see, we won't see very many starters out there, but we will definitely see a few. It's just a matter of how long that we'll see them out there.
And speaking, obviously, of Ezekiel Elliott, obviously, what Tony Pollard looks like, he'll probably get the first team reps. I mean, what do you expect from him? How much of a threat do you think he is for that Texans defense?
I don't know. I don't think Tony Pollard is much. I mean, he's definitely not what Zeke is. So I don't think he's too much of a threat. And quite honestly, I don't know how they're going to treat him at this point because they still haven't had a contract with Zeke. So I don't know how much they're really going to show and how much they're going to use Pollard. So I think Pollard might get the star treatment in Dallas because as it sits right now, he might be one of the most important players on their team, especially with just how the team as a whole is built around the running back. In the running back position. So I imagine you see Pollard for a little bit and then they get him on the sidelines, especially, if we're under the assumption that it is possible that he can miss regular season games. We'll just see him just for a little bit.
I'm glad that you mentioned, obviously, that Cowboys team is very much built around the running back position because I remember Jerry Jones' comments a few weeks ago saying, oh, we don't need our leading rusher to win a Super Bowl. I had to admit, I found those slightly risky comments, if I'm being perfectly honest. I mean, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's even funnier when you go back couple months ago and his own son who's making the decision, Stephen Jones, called Zeke the straw that stirred the drink. So on one hand you got Jerry Jones saying that, and on the other hand you got his son who might actually have even more of a hand in football operations as it sits right now, saying that Zeke Elliott is the straw that stirs the drink. So if Zeke Elliott wants to combat that in negotiations, all he's gonna do is quote Jerry's son, because Stephen said it, and I think any football fan sees how important Zeke is to that team. So, Jerry's kind of playing up a little bit. There is a report today that I think it was from Ed Werder that apparently Zeke got offered top three running back money or something like that. So they're at least throwing negotiations out there. But, when your own son is saying that he's the most important piece, then, it kind of takes away from anything Jerry Jones says.
Yeah, I have to admit, for any regardless of what team you support, that's definitely a situation that's going to be worth watching over the coming weeks. But obviously heading back,
and it's also funny with Jerry, not to interrupt you, but it's also funny with Jerry the other day. He had a quote like a month ago about this, and he said, well, you don't need a running back to lead the league in rushing to win a Super Bowl. Okay, that's true, but in all three of your Super Bowls, your running back led the league in rushing. So you do need a running back to lead the league in rushing, because all three of those rings that you hear about from the Cowboys, you did have the leading rusher in the NFL. So it's just interesting that he said that.
Well, especially considering how much Dak relies on him in the passing game as well. I just found that, to be honest, incredibly naive from Jerry Jones, if I'm being perfectly honest there. But yeah, that's something to watch out for this weekend and in the coming weeks. So obviously, it'll be mostly backups this weekend, but are there any major injury concerns you think Texans fans should be keeping an eye out for entering Saturday?
I don't know about concerns, but I don't think Justin Reed's going to play any of the preseason. They're just being real cautious with him. I don't think that Tashawn Gibson is probably going to play. But as far as injury concerns, I mean, there really hasn't been all, you know, they've been somewhat fortunate, relatively speaking, with the injuries to where the Texans have actually, you know, had a relatively healthy camp. You know, he lost the backup tackle yesterday. Don't even know if he was going to be second, third team or even make the roster at that. But, you know, there's really no, they're really relatively healthy. The Matt Khalil mystery continues. You know, he's missed his eighth straight day of practice. So, don't know if he's hurt. Don't know if they're just holding him out or whatever. But that's the one thing to keep an eye on. But I'm not sure that Matt Khalil even makes this team. But, you know, outside of Kiki QT, Greg Mance, Kiki might be ready for the opening week. He might not. But, you know, you got some depth there. But they've been relatively healthy, knock on wood, so far. So that's not really too much to concern. But, I mean, they'll probably hold some guys back. Justin Reed not going to play. As I said, I don't expect Gibson to play either. But yeah, I mean, they've had a relatively healthy camp outside of Kiki QT, and that when you initially saw that, you know, that could have been a lot worse than it actually was. So they're actually in pretty good shape.
And I have to admit, I think the Texans are quite lucky at that safety situation because obviously without Gibson and Reed, they've still got the likes of Adeo and Boddy Calhoun who can play back there as well, and AJ Moore. I know he's not out in at the moment, but they've got some players who've done pretty well there so far this offseason, and I think that's going to be a tough position to cut down there, so that's going to be something to watch out for. Also, you mentioned the offensive tackle, David Steinmetz, who was injured yesterday. He's out for the year. I mean, do you think, if you have been perfectly honest, do you think he actually would have made the roster at the end of the day?
I mean, I think it would have been a coin toss. I don't think so. But again, that would probably depend on Khalil and if they made a trade or not. But, you know, if he made the roster in a perfect world, he wouldn't step on the field. So take that for what that is. But I don't think Khalil's going to make the roster. So he would have maybe had an outside chance. But, you know, your starting right tackle is Shontrell Henderson. I think if the season started right now, Roger Johnson would be your left tackle. Then you'd have the backup swing tackle of Julian Davenport. And then on the inside, you probably have Nick Martin, who just returned to practice. And then you'd probably have either Sharping and Howard or Howard and Fulton on the inside there as well. So, you know, in a perfect world, I don't think he was going to play. So, no, I really don't. I don't think that he would have it would have been an uphill battle for him, but the Matt Khalil thing probably would have benefited him to maybe make the roster.
I have to admit, from my point of view, I think the offensive line we saw last week with Howard, obviously Johnson from the left, Howard left guard, and then you got Zach Fulton at center. I thought he did a very good job, to be perfectly honest. And then
Sharping. I did too, man.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. Then Sharping at right guard, I thought he looked good there too. And Henderson, I thought, had a decent game as well. I mean, I was slightly surprised that Martin was straight back into the lineup.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And that's a real polarizing topic, Nick Martin. I almost said that. I wish Zach Martin were on this team. But Nick Martin, I think it's a polarizing topic when you talk about it because, you know, it seems like the coaching staff assumes that, you know, he's the guy and stuff. But, I mean, last year, take Pro Football Focus ratings. They're a good resource. Sometimes you take them with a grain of salt. But they had him ranked in the AFC South as the fifth best center, which there's four teams in the division. They had two Colt centers ahead of them. And if you just watch the game like you did, obviously, you got some good eyes. Fulton looked good at center. I mean, he looked good. Like, he looked good. And I was sitting there wondering, you know, and as I was watching him in camp and going to practice, you know, is Zach Fulton better than Nick Martin? And, you know, I asked Wade Smith, the former Texans offensive lineman. I've asked, you know, Seth Payne, the former Texans D-line. I'm like, seriously, can you tell me 100% certainty, and obviously coaches are watching more tape, that Nick Martin is better than Fulton, and neither one of them really could. And so it is interesting you say that. I would like to think that he's going to get a fair shot at it, but, man, it just seems like Martin, it's his job to lose. For whatever reason, and then I guess Fulton's going to have to compete with Sharping, who's actually looked pretty good, and Howard, who Bill O'Brien said will be ready to go week one. But I'm with you, man. Fulton looked pretty good.
And that's another strange situation. Obviously, so entering this offseason, everyone was very unhappy about the fact that the Texans didn't get Andre Dillard. And don't get me wrong, I completely get that. I thought he would have been a fantastic pick. But at the end of the day, I think they've actually done a relatively good job with both Howard and Sharping. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I'm with you on that, man. I think they can eventually be tackles. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, we get some callers into the show and stuff, and they're like, well, you drafted him to be a tackle, and he's a guard, and that's – I mean, it's really not that rare in the NFL where a guy starts out at guard and then works his way to tackle. I'll just go to Dallas. Dallas has Lyle Collins at right tackle right now. He's probably going to have to leave there because of all the guys they're going to have to pay in the offseason. So he's probably going to be the highest paid offensive lineman on the market next year in free agency. Could be a potential Texan, depending on what happens at right tackle. He started his rookie year at right guard. So, and then they moved him over to tackle, and now, you know, he's had success there. And when he leaves, which is what's going to happen after the season, they have Connor Williams, the second round pick last year, at right guard, and he's just going to move to right tackle. So, you know how good the Cowboys have handled the O-line. It's really not that rare, but if you told me or if I told you that the Texans were going to draft, and we don't know if Sharping is going to start or not. We know that Titus is against the Saints, but if you told me the Texans are going to, with two of their early draft picks, draft two starters on the offensive line, I think anyone in their right mind would have taken that, especially considering it's not really a default thing. The guys have actually looked, you know, starting by default, the guys have actually looked pretty good doing what they're doing.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you there. And it's definitely going to be a whole line worth watching this this coming season. So, I mean, with Steinmetz out now and obviously Khalil not playing at this point in time, who do you think is going to benefit most in terms of reps over the coming 2 weeks?
I mean, it's going to be I think Davenport's going to get every chance to win the swing tackle position. Chantrell's got it locked down. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't bring some guys in just because, you know, Titus Howard was one of your other tackles, and they're holding him out of practice with that hurt finger. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Roderick Johnson obviously benefits Chantrell. I think Julian Davenport really benefits the most if you're asking him for someone on the roster, because now he doesn't really have a ton of competition, you know, for that swing tackle spot, whether it's right, left, or anything like that. But I wouldn't be surprised as cuts start getting made. Hell, maybe they trade Jarrell Adams because there's such a crowded tight end room. Maybe they trade a guy like a Jarrell Adams or something like that for, you know, a tackle that's not going to make another team's roster or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they didn't work the waiver wire and the guy who truly benefits the most from that isn't even on the roster yet.
Well, actually, that was one of the topics I was going to bring up next is do you think they use this as an opportunity to perhaps bring in someone a bit more experienced just to challenge that group for that last spot and really push them for the last couple of weeks?
Well, man, I've been on the Trent Williams bandwagon since the very beginning of this whole thing out there in Washington. I've been on the, you know, if you have to trade a first or whatever, I'm 100% on board with bringing in a 7-time Pro Bowler to the Houston Texans. The craziest stat about that is, you know, Trent Williams has been in the Pro Bowl 7 times in his NFL career. The Texans, in their entire franchise existence since 2002, have had 6 offensive line Pro Bowl selections. So, I mean, that just kind of puts in perspective the value of Trent Williams. I think in a perfect world, you trade for Trent Williams, you put him on the left side, and then everything gets there to go. I'm young, but I think ideally they feel like their starting offensive line is in that building right now, and they're not even really being completely transparent on Khalil, so we don't know what the possibility is there. I mean, Bill O'Brien swears that he's still the starting left tackle. I don't believe him when he says that, but I mean, he's still there. He's still, you know, hopping along on the sidelines for, you know, 8 days straight now. So until they give some clarity on the Khalil thing, I don't know that they're going to entertain the possibility of bringing in somebody. But I would be on the phone for Trent Williams right now.
I mean, yeah, well, what are your thoughts on the Khalil situation right now? You mentioned, obviously, you don't think he'll even be on the roster. I mean, do you think they're trying to maybe take the pressure off of Howard or Johnson by saying this? Or do you think there's something else going on?
Man, I honestly, I mean, I watched the guy, you know, when I was there, and everybody watched him. He was terrible. Like, I'm not trying to belittle the guy, but he was god awful. And I mean, he's missed 30 games the last 3 years. He missed all of last season. In 2017, I want to say it was like he was close to the 60th ranked tackle in the league. The year before that, he missed 13 games. From 2012, he was an alternate in the Pro Bowl with the Vikings. He completely fell apart his final 3 years with the Vikings. I mean, he's shown nothing to make you think that Matt Khalil can play. Like, I don't even know what they're trying to hope that he can go back to, because he really wasn't that good when he was on the field. He can't stay. I think that either they're just trying to protect him from himself, or I think that he could legitimately be, because he had some comments last Wednesday talking about, you know, battling with the man in the mirror and stuff. I think he could be coming to the realization that it's just time to retire, and I think they're just kind of respecting that and letting him find his way, because I just can't – I can't fathom. And Bill O'Brien has done some stuff that has surprised me, but I just can't fathom that he was sitting there watching what I was watching, knowing all the information I just gave you, and thinks that Matt Khalil is a good option right now. I mean, Roger Johnson's by far the better player right now. And that's not to say that Roderick Johnson is going to be, like, in the Hall of Fame in 15 years. It's more just about how bad Matt Khalil is. So whether it's him contemplating retirement, whether it's them letting him get healthy before they release him, maybe they think they can trade him. I just can't believe that Matt Khalil is going to be the starting left tackle. But I've been wrong before, and – you know, Bill O'Brien is at least saying as much, so we'll just have to see. But again, he doesn't really have to tell us, you know, who's starting this at this point in the season. But I just can't, in my world, I can't envision Matt Khalil starting for the Houston Texans at left tackle this year. I just cannot see that.
Well, if I'm being honest with you, I hope you're right. I personally don't see it either. I have not been impressed with him in any way, shape, or form. I'm happy to see that he's healthy again. Don't get me wrong. He seems like a nice guy, but as a starter, no, I don't personally see it at all. But as we get...
Hey, when you say someone's a nice guy, man, when you say someone's a nice guy, you know there's a but afterwards. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you break up with a girl or something like that, you always preface it with, she's a nice girl, but. So just the fact that you're saying he's a nice guy tells you everything you need to know about where Matt Khalil sits in the NFL pecking order right now.
Exactly. I remember a little while ago somebody saying that it's everything, if somebody says but in the middle of the sentence, everything they said before them was basically just a lie, or they were just saying to cover themselves up, and after the but is where the truth comes out. And it's a real shame, but yeah.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see that 2012 Pro Bowler this year for the Texans. But as we get closer to week one, I mean, obviously we go on to one of the bigger stories of the offseason, Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, when do you think we're going to see him? Or will we see him?
Man, the general John McClain over here is, you know, acting like he thinks that he might get traded. So I think it's possible that we see Clowney get traded. If we do see him, I think we're going to see him the week of week one, and he's just going to show up. Who knows what Clowney would get, but the people close to the situation seem to think he's going to be traded, but you know, we're approaching that deadline. I don't see him not showing up and collecting checks. It just doesn't seem like the Clowney that I know. But I think, you know, if we get to, let's say we're 18 days away, 17 days away from the season, if there's no sight of Clowney 10 days from now, then, you know, I think it's going to be time to panic. But the people. That are in charge of following these things and beat writers and stuff like that say he's going to get traded. I just find it hard to believe that you're going to be able to get the value for him, given the fact that, you know, the deadline has passed for him to negotiate a long-term deal. He basically has all be pissed off and just try to make money on their dime, and then maybe they could part ways after the year. But if they trade him, it's hard to imagine they're going to get the equal value in return.
I'd have to agree with you there, and it's going to be definitely something, again, to keep an eye out on, as I always say. But so I think the player who, for me, gets impacted most by this trade actually is going to be Whitney Mercilus. He's looked very good this offseason. Everyone keeps saying how healthy he is, how good he's looked in the pass rush. Crennel said he's going to move him around a bit more this year, and I'm personally hoping to see a lot more of him in the pass rush and hopefully get that sack count back up again. I mean, let's say Clowney does come back in. How much do you think that's going to affect Mercilus this year?
Yeah, it's basically a snowball effect of disgruntlement, you know, because we had Whitney on our show straight off the practice field, and, you know, he admitted he didn't like the way he was used last year. He thought he should be, in his words, moving forward instead of moving backward, you know, getting after the quarterback. If Bill O'Brien has said that's what's going to happen this year, Romare Crennel said that's what's going to happen. That's what's been going on in camp so far. We saw him get the sack in the last preseason game. But, you know, if Clowney comes back, it's hard not to imagine that needs to change. But I would think even if Clowney does come back, it would be in the best interest of the defense, you know, to get after the quarterback a little bit more. You know, because last year you were playing bad quarterback after bad quarterback after bad quarterback, and you kind of yuck it up and win those ugly games. You know, this year we could list the quarterbacks that they're playing, and my gosh, they're playing some of the best. So you're going to need as many guys as you can to get after the quarterback, and I think it's going to be on Romeo to maximize Whitney Mercilus's you know, pass rushing, whether Clowney's here or not. But if Clowney's not here, you got to think that's more sacks. And you know what they say about sacks? Sacks get sacks. So hopefully he can go get him some money. But I think Whitney's going to be pass rushing a little bit more. But I think in his heart of hearts, he has no problem with Clowney not being there right now because he's getting a lot more opportunity and looks damn good doing what he's doing.
Certainly, certainly. So sticking with the defense, I mean, obviously they've got a very new-look secondary this year. I mean, what are your thoughts so far on their development?
I'm a lot more pleased with corners than I thought I would be. You know, last year, the cornerback position was an absolute disaster. I think heading into free agency, I said on my show with my co-host John Lopez that I was more concerned about the corners than the offensive line simply because, you know, I thought Desai could make that to, you know, some of the weaknesses on the offensive line. But Bradley Roby's looked pretty good in the preseason. He's looked good in practice. Jonathan Joseph's still battling father time. I like Lonnie Johnson. And they got the safeties behind them that you mentioned, you know. So they got the safeties helping them out. They got JoJo in front of them doing their thing. And I just think it, overall with Bradley Roby and Jonathan Joseph, it's better than Aaron Colvin and Jonathan Joseph. The most fascinating thing to me, you know, just watching Colvin, and I was a fan of Aaron Colvin, you know, the rolling dice on him to see if he could be the number two corner. It's fascinating watching him because you can make a case he's, I don't even know, maybe the fifth best corner in camp right now. If that, I mean, I don't know. Just if you were just watching and you didn't know who everyone was, you could make that case. It's just fascinating that, you know, they were relying on him last year to be the number two. And I think the fact that he's no longer the number two, I think they've come a long way. I like the potential with Lonnie Johnson and, you know, Bradley Roby, just like Tyrann Mathieu did last year, trying to prove it, trying to get paid. So he's looked really, really good so far. And I've actually been pretty pleased with the cornerbacks in camp.
Certainly. And then over the course of the whole, obviously we've got a lot of guys there, 8 to 9 guys at the moment at least. Has there been anyone so far that you've looked at and that has really stood out to you that perhaps you didn't expect to stand out as much as they have?
Just on the whole roster as a whole, stood out, or what position group?
Let's go with more along the lines of the backups in particular.
The backups that have stuck out on defense, I would say Dylan Cole. I mean, and I don't even know if you can really consider him a backup at this point. You know, he's on the field so much, but Dylan Cole has really, really stuck out. He's a guy who I think is going to take that next step. He's a playmaker. He's fast. He swarms. Dylan Cole steps out, really, really sticks out. And I mean, just pick a tight end, whoever you think the starting tight end is. All the tight ends, you know, they look like they're ready to take that next step. They've really, really stuck out in camp, regardless of who it is. And Kahale Waring really hasn't even got on the field. But, you know, all these backup tight ends, Dylan Cole, I think this Texans team has some surprising depth on it. And I think the tight ends are really the position that has stuck out.
Yeah, that's going to be a position that's going to be tough to decide on come the start of September, because like you said, I mean, I know Fels, for example, he was someone I was looking at thinking, right, he's going to provide some good blocking. He's essentially an extra lineman for them there, and he'll be a good coach, if any, or mentor, you should say, for the likes of Jordan Thomas in terms of blocking. But actually, his receiving has been really good, has been really solid, and by all accounts, he's made some really good catches throughout camp, and he's turned a lot ahead, so that's going to be a difficult position to cut down, especially like you mentioned, Jarrell Adams. Obviously, he had the stiff arm against the Lions last weekend. Brilliant play. And he's looked good as well. So it's going to be a really tricky spot there. Do they keep all five? Do they cut down? But how do they do that? I mean, who would you cut at this point in time? It's going to be a tough position.
It's going to have to be Adams, which sucks because he's been really good, you know. And I think he belongs in the NFL, and I think he'll be on someone's roster. But I think it's going to be Adams just because, you know, I think you could almost make a case to keep four tight ends regardless, but Kahale Waring is a third-round pick, so you're keeping him regardless, and you mentioned Fells blocking. I think they'd keep Fells, but I think the guy that's going to go is Jarrell Adams, which is a damn shame because he's been really good.
I'd have to agree with you. And I think four tight ends would be a good idea because obviously they've talked quite a few times in the past about Akins and how he can be quite a versatile player. They can line him up in different positions. Obviously, Thomas is a converted wide receiver. So, I mean, if needed, should they have injuries like they did last year, maybe they look at pushing him out to wide receiver if absolutely necessary. So I think that makes perfect sense for the Texans. But I spoke to Dave Damashek just a couple of days ago, and I've got to ask your opinion on this. So he said that if they were to change the structure of the NFL to 18 regular season games, he would like to see sort of almost a bowl game within that Cowboys-Texans every single year. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think more rivalry games would be good. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris brought up the other day, you know, the possibility of, you know, having two consistent rivals each year, whether the Texans and Cowboys play every year or, you know, something like that. I think it would be good. I think 18 games would be, you know, almost a disaster based on the way they're proposing it, where, you know, someone would have, you know, players would have to sit out X amount of games or whatever. It just seems like it would unbalance the schedule so significantly to where, you know, maybe the Texans would get to play, let's say the Cowboys without, when they're resting Zeke Elliott, and then let's say the Titans get to play them, you know, when Zeke Elliott's on the field. It just seems like so unbalanced. But, you know, if they did go to 18, I think adding a rivalry game or something like that would be great. I mean, I think that would be a good idea, assuming they do that. I just don't see how the players allow that to happen, but I guess money would probably be the only thing that would allow it to happen. And the owners do seem kind of focused on making it happen just based on all the reports. But I just find it hard to believe that they want to do that, especially if they're talking about, you know, players have to sell X amount of games. I just don't think that's fair to the fans, and I don't think it's good for, you know, just the balancing of the schedules.
No, I'd have to agree with you there, especially because at the end of the day, you want to see that you want to have your best guys on the field. And if you've got one or two games where they're not out there, I mean, if we're being perfectly honest, it's not going to be a great deal different from a preseason game in some regards, which would be a real shame. But yes, I mean, to close it off, I like to try and close out these podcasts by throwing my guests off course just a little bit where I can. So to finish off here, the Houston Roughnecks XFL team, their name and their logo were both revealed yesterday. What's your opinion of them?
Trash, man. Those logos look terrible. Those logos look like some bad clip art from like an old school desktop computer. I don't know what they were thinking. I think they should have been called Black Gold, an oil reference, Black Gold, and I think they should have had black and gold uniforms. I don't know what this roughneck thing is, but that's what they went with. But just those logos, man. I don't know. I can't believe they took as long as they did to make those logos, but they need to get a refund on whoever did that. I'm disappointed in the Roughneck title. I wanted Black Gold or something like that.
I must admit, I quite like the sort of Oilers throwback in the logo, though. I think that's kind of cool.
I can get down with that. I can get down with that part of it, but the logos as a whole, man, I don't know who the hell the designer was there. They must have hired like an intern from a community college or something like that.
I mean, I know. I've been pushing this for quite a while now. I really wanted them to bring back the Gamblers, just because that. I just think the whole Jim Kelly era there is just awesome. I don't know how you feel about that.
Exactly, man. Yeah, that was a fun time. I mean, the AFL was. That was a fun league, man. Like if you watch the 30 for 30 and all that kind of stuff, it was a fun time. I mean, I thought that was most people's bet for what they went. But you know, sometimes these corporate types, they just overthink things. You know what I mean? Like they think that everybody thinks they're going to do this, and they just try to throw a curveball for you. Next thing you know, you got the Roughnecks instead of the Gamblers. Just the same. Some of these corporate types.
Landry, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much for joining us. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
At Landry Locker on Twitter and Instagram. My Instagram game is not that strong. I just kind of picked that up. So you got at Landry Locker on Instagram, on Twitter, and radio.com app if you ever want to listen to In the Loop with myself and John Lopez on Sports Radio 610, the home of the Texans.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've been your host for the week, Anthony Wood. Follow me on Twitter at ARWoodNFL. And of course, keep up to date with everything Texans at the Texans Wire of USA Today. Thank you very much for joining.